Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Dassey Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks very much, Dermot. She stepped out and he stepped in again. We last more than 44 days. He's 42. Rishi Sunak. No surprise, really, no surprise. We were going fact-finding on Rishi Sunak, just stuff you may not know about him. He wanted to be a Jedi Knight when he was growing up. His favourite football player was Matt Le Tissier, and he sneaked a TV into his school to watch Euro 96. He has 7 fillings because of his Coca-Cola habit. And he is loaded. Himself and his wife are loaded, ladies and gentlemen. They're worth between them 730, there's a real Kildare one, £730 million, according to the Sunday Times rich list. His wife's name is Akshata Murthy. And the money primarily comes from Murthy's stake in her father's company, Infosys. She also owns startup incubator Catamaran Ventures UK and has shares in a half dozen or so other companies. These are all the things people are going to be poring over now, or maybe not. If he does a good job, who cares? That's what they'll be saying. They have properties all over the place, 3 in the UK and 1 in Santa Monica, California. They live in a 5-bedroom house in West London during the week, and at the weekends they head up to North Yorkshire to a Georgian manor house. And they've transformed it into something of a wellness retreat with a 400,000 indoor swimming pool, gym, yoga studio, hot tub and tennis court. It does beg the question. Now, maybe it does beg the question. If you're worth 740 or 730 million pounds, why would you take on that job? Why? Is it ego? Is it doing service? Is it giving something back? But why would you? Why? Rishi, if you're listening, give us a ring and tell us why. Because he could just retire up to his wellness centre house in North Yorkshire, live a life of wellness and relaxation, the children, the wife, the dogs. But that's not what people want, is it? Succession is back in the spring. Yeah, maybe that's what it's about, really, Succession, isn't it? It's all that sort of stuff. So the promo's there and it's season number 4 back in the spring, so fans of that will be over the moon. Delighted to see that back in our tellies for those dark January and February evenings. Cuddle up on the couch with Logan Roy and the clan. And he refers to everybody but him as pygmies. I'm 100 feet tall. All of those are just pygmies. That's one of the lines from the promo. Would you give up your smartphone? Would you give up your old sins? There's an English writer called Frank Cottrell Boyce, and he's been writing in the New Statesman about ditching his smartphone. He says, I decided to ditch my smartphone and get an old-fashioned version, a brick, to spend time away from apps. From now on, if a train was delayed, I would read a book and not spend anxious ages poking about online to discover what was happening. So I really did ditch the smartphone. This was supposed to help me free up more time, but there was no way to copy over my contacts to the non-smartphone, the brick, so every number was an unknown one. Answering the phone without knowing whose voice you're going to hear was unexpectedly nerve-wracking. Well, it would be in this day and age where people have to text you before they ring you to ask for permission to ring you. My dad used to answer the phone by reciting our number. Ah, yeah, back in the day. Hello, 045. Yeah. But I let callers keep talking until they give themselves away. The world of phone etiquette has perished and now there's only anxious uncertainty. Would you give up your smartphone? So you can have a phone, right? Just for the basics, though. I think you're allowed to text. Are you allowed to text on that? The old bricks used to be able to text, yeah. So just calls and texts, that's all. No apps. No Spotify. No Google. No whatever you're having yourself. No app that listens to you when you're snoring and tells you how much quality sleep you've had. None of those. No app to point at a plant and find out what it is and how to care for it. No plant or no app even to tell you what to do with your dog when it's feeling a little bit anxious. All of those things are gone. You just have the old brick. I don't know if I don't know. Nobody in the team was willing to give up their smartphone. I don't know about you. 51551, text for the last time. Or you can text, of course, you can text. Speaking of dogs, it's Halloween this day week, isn't it? Yeah. Halloween falls on the bank holiday Monday. And of course, fireworks all over the place. I can hear them at night. And they scare the living daylights out of our pets. They get very anxious. So I see that there are tips online for dog owners. Dog Trust have 5 top tips to help your pet all this week. Because it's going to get noisier and louder as the week goes on and we get closer to Halloween. At 5, never force your dog to go outside. If your dog seeks reassurance or comfort, don't be afraid to give it. That's always there anyway. Give your dog options. Either play games or give them quiet time in their favourite spot. Make sure your house and garden are secure. And finally, top of the heap of the 5 top tips from Dog Trust, walk your dog before it gets dark. And just, I suppose, just be more aware that there are noises out there and they do get scared. Lovely dog on the cover of The Independent today. His name is Gus and he's owned by Mandy and Kelly Harrington. And there was lovely pictures on the news last night. Mandy arrived out to welcome back Kelly from the European Championships with her gold medal. So Kelly had the gold medal and Mandy had Gus the dog. And there's a picture on the cover of The Independent. Christina Desmond and Kelly there and Gus in the middle. It's lovely. And congratulations to all our boxers. 3 gold medals, Amy Broadhurst, Aoife O'Rourke and Kelly Harrington. And it was Ireland's most successful ever international tournament with Aoife Broadhurst named Boxer of the Tournament. And Team Ireland were named as the team of the tournament with Irish boxing's head coach, Zara Antia, accepting the trophy on behalf of the team. So it was a good week's work by all concerned. And we have Kelly in with Roddy tomorrow week. Kelly is the biography, co-written, ghost-written, whatever you're having yourself, by Roddy Doyle, and both of them are coming in to have a chat with us tomorrow week. That's Tuesday. And it'll be a different world next Tuesday because the clocks will have changed. So if you're finding it very dark in the morning, that'll change next week because we'll have the extra hour of light in the morning. Of course, the evenings will be closed in completely by then. It'll be darker. Where were we last? Oh, yeah, yes. So it was dark about 6 o'clock yesterday. So it means it'll be dark around 5 o'clock, maybe 5:30 this time next week. 5 on 5, 5 on Ray at RTE.ie. Yep, Ray, my golden retriever is absolutely scared of the fireworks, says Roisin. Our golden retriever is scared of the fireworks as well. Gets very tetchy and nervy this time of the year. So we just have to be cognizant of that. Ed Sheeran needs the money, so he's putting his name to condiments. No, he doesn't need the money. Anyway, Ed Sheeran is about to launch a new business venture, it seems. Fans of Ed will already know how much he loves ketchup. He has a tattoo of Heinz tomato ketchup on his upper inner arm. And so involved in the condiment is he. He even designed a Heinz ketchup bottle and sold it at auction. So he's a big fan. So now his trademark, his brand, Tingly Ted's, going to include condiments like mayonnaises, marinades and seasonings, as well as the aforementioned ketchup, which he thinks his fans will just love. Owner of restaurant Bertie Blossoms in London, that may well be the first place to get a taste of Tingly Ted. I didn't know he owned a restaurant. I suppose it's just for a bit of crack, isn't it? Because we were asking, why would Rishi Sunak want to be Prime Minister when he's worth £730 million? Why would Ed Sheeran want to put his name to a range of condiments? Well, Ed Sheeran, bit of crack. Rishi Sunak, answers on postcards, please, to The Ray Darcy Show, RT, Donnybrook, Dublin 4. Right, I'll tell you about our quiz in a moment. But first, on this Monday afternoon, the Be Good Tanyas. Good afternoon. Be Good Tanyas, the littlest bird. That's nice, isn't it? Monday afternoon. 5 on 5, 5 on Ray at RT.ie. On giving up your old smartphone. Give up your old smartphone. I gave up my smartphone 3 years ago. I use my mum's old phone. I own a INTDRNATIONAK online business, says Lawrence. That's either true or a brilliant gag. One or the other. Because, of course, the old phones don't have predictive text. So I'm presuming he's saying he owns an international online business. And if he had a smartphone, it would say international. But instead it says INTDRNATIONAK. Which international lack. Yeah. So, Lawrence, are you very funny or is that... Is, anyway, about 2 years ago, family bought smartphone for me. Couldn't make head, arse nor tail of it. So still using my little black Nokia 330. Just grand. Calls and texts as John A. in Cork. Hi, John. Was without any kind of phone for 3 weeks recently and the freedom was lovely. No people pleasing. Bliss. All the best, says that person. I would be willing to give up my smartphone. Do any of your listeners know of a device that I could search Google Maps for work holidays if I gave up my smartphone? Mike, Tramore, County Waterford. What did we do beforehand? We had maps in the car, didn't we, firstly? And then we had travel agencies that we went to. We rang and we said, you know, I want to go to Lanzarote for a week in January. What have you got to offer? And they'd ring you back and they'd tell you. I miss the old maps, I have to say. And because sometimes they get it wrong, don't they? And we're surrendering our control of a situation by just putting the name into the GPS or whatever and just following the instructions. Whereas before we had to sit down, open the map, then now I know where I am. And you had this sort of helicopter view of the country and where you were going. And even if you got lost, you'd know what direction you were going and you should turn left because it's that way. Whereas with the GPS thing, it's, you know, you surrender all that. Anyway, I don't have an iPhone, says Siobhan, or a smartphone, or TV. I'm without internet at the moment. That's the only one I miss. Aha. Uh-huh. So you have a computer then, do you? You must have a computer. My dog used to be petrified of fireworks, so I used to turn up the sound a bit on the TV or radio and it camouflaged the noise going on outside. Marcella in Mayo. Nice tip, Marcella. Thank you for that. Now, I better tell you about our quiz. Here we go. We're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and answer 3 questions on bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And we have a prize, yes. A luxurious trip to Carton House, a Fairmont hotel. Fall for Fairmont, I should say. Fairmont at Carton House and enjoy a cosy escape for two to this stunning Georgian estate with a 2-night stay and dinner. Ireland's first Fairmont managed property, Carton House in Kildare, surrounded by over 1,000 acres of sweeping parkland, ancient woodlands, lakes and the meandering River Rye, making it the most picturesque backdrop for an autumn stay just 25 minutes from Dublin. So much to discover at Carton House. We're giving one lucky listener the chance of a stay in the garden wing with breakfast in the house on both mornings and dinner in the atmospheric Kathleen's kitchen on one evening. Sounds delicious, the whole thing. Carton House there. If you want to be in with a chance to win, you have to answer our qualifying question, which is this. Bono has said he wants to make an uncompromising rock and roll album. What band does Bono front? Is it U2 or U3? So Bono has said he wants to make an uncompromising rock and roll album. What band does he front? U2 or U3? 0818715925. That's 0818715925. And good luck with that.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, I first met my next guest when she was just 3 years old. Now she's 18 and she joins me with her mother to mark EB Awareness Week. Claudia, good afternoon. Liz, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I can't believe it's 15 years, Claudia, since I met you.
I know.
Down in Killishee House in Naas.
Mad, tiny. Yeah. Tiny little thing.
Yes, and there was a very young Johnny Sexton there as well, wasn't
very it? Young. I actually probably don't even remember that, to be honest.
Do you not? No. Because your mother was telling me recently that I had met him on the way in and he had just told me in confidence that he just got engaged. So I was asked to say a few words and I said, and congratulations to Johnny, who's just got engaged. And I wasn't supposed to tell anybody. So anyway, sorry, hopefully I won't put my foot in it today. Anyway, great to see you. So, You're probably sick of explaining EB, but would you do it for our listeners one more time, please?
Of course. Yeah. So I was born with a genetic skin condition called epidermolysis bullosa. Everyone calls it EB because no one can say that word. So I am missing the gene collagen 7, which creates collagen. And collagen knits all your layers of skin together. So without that, they're rubbing off each other constantly, which creates wounds and blisters, etc. So it makes my life a living hell, you know, and every aspect of my life is affected by it.
Right. And you, I see your arms are bandaged, your whole body is bandaged.
Yeah, 80% covered.
80%?
Yeah.
And those dressings have to be changed how often?
3 times a week, but all pretty much every day as well. I have my large ones, which can take up to 4 hours, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, by my wonderful nurses, which makes it 10 times easier. And then I have to have some sort of bandage done every day. Whatever's been damaged through the night, it needs to be fixed before I go to college.
Now, I suppose back when you were three and up into six, there was a sort of a novelty because, you know, you were going to all these things in Killishy House and Farmley. And although life was pretty rough, it was still a little bit of a novelty. And I believe in the last couple of years, it's sort of dawned on you in a way.
It has, yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, my condition is a progressive condition, so it will get worse over time, and I probably will get worse than I am now. But I think in the last 2 years, it has really just hit me at how severe my condition is and how much it is holding back what I can do. And it's been a real struggle the last 2 years. I have infection after infection, and it wipes me out entirely. Like, the two most important years of my school life, I missed at least one day a week, if not more. And it was so crucial and vital for me to get in that study time and the academics that I needed. But it couldn't happen because I just physically couldn't get out of bed. And I'm still struggling with them to this day. I'm trying to manage them as best as possible, but it really shakes me as a person, and each time it happens, it takes a little piece of it with me, and you know, it's hard, you know.
Are you in pain now?
No, but I'm on high doses of multiple painkillers. Right. So without them,
all the time.
Yeah, they wear off about 4 hours every time, so I have to take them up to three times a day.
Right.
Yeah.
Liz, how are you? So, I suppose Claudia hitting 18, it's a big deal, isn't it?
Huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, big milestone.
Yeah.
Yeah, time to reflect.
Yeah. Because Claudia, you're an adult now.
I know, I don't feel like it. I'm sure lots of people would say I'm not an adult as well.
No, but you can vote and you can have a drink if you so wish and other things. Take us back to, you know, when Claudia was born. Is Claudia your first child?
Yeah, she's my only child because of the genetics of it. Yeah. So, yeah, it would be 25% risk on every pregnancy thereafter. So that opened up a whole other can of worms. And obviously at this stage, I'm way too old. So we parked that car. I suppose average couple from the Liberties, myself and Gary, just knocking around, going out with each other, decided to get married. Just really, really a natural progression in life. You know, getting married kind of hand in hand went with that, like, let's have a child. It wasn't overthought or anything like that. And you genuinely believe that, you know, everything's going to be okay, you know. But I often think of my wedding vows in Donora Avenue Church, like, for better, for worse, in sickness and in health. Did I really realise what I was actually saying, you know? So we had Claudio in the first year of marriage. Gary is a dormant carrier of a gene, and I'm a dormant carrier of a gene, which we wouldn't have known about. And planned our first baby, had Claudia, and when she was born, it was a suspected case of epidermolysis bullosa. So we waited a month. She was biopsied and we went through the procedure, not really understanding. We were kind of being spoon-fed at that stage, what was kind of like, how serious can a skin condition be? And then within a month, the results came back to say that she had got recessive dystrophic epidermolysis bullosa, which would be one of the worst living forms, if not the worst living form of EB. So total and utter shock, turned our world upside down. No, 20 years married this year we were, and when I look back at it, I actually I haven't been living, I'm just existing. I don't remember an awful lot of it. It's just every day getting up, just going through the motions, just trying to get through as best as you can.
You've heard this before, Claudia, haven't you? Because I'd say our listeners are going, that must be very difficult for Claudia to hear.
It is hard, and it's hard to hear my mother say that, because a mother's role is to look after their child to a certain extent, where my additional needs, she shouldn't have to look after. And this is one of the main focuses today and around this year's EB Awareness Week, is the lack of nurses and the lack of carers, because I'm not 10-year-old, but she's getting to a certain age, as am I, where we don't want to do that to each other. It's a very vulnerable role I'm in, and I'm very vulnerable when someone else comes in to do that. It shouldn't be my mother's job at this day and age.
And that's the thing, isn't it? Because as a parent, you want to take care of your child. That's a very natural thing. But part of you taking care of Claudia over the years was inflicting pain.
Yeah.
And I just can't get my head around that.
Mm. I think that was the turning point for me. I kind of managed for 3 or 4 years initially. It's like you handed the baby and you just say, you just got to do this. You just move forward. You either sink or swim, isn't it? We chose to swim. And I managed, you know, the work-life balance. You know, I was only a new wife. Just everything was just all so new. And it wasn't like, is there an expectation around when you have a child? We didn't have anything to benchmark. That became our normal. And as I said, we did it for 3 to 4 years. But Claudia then became aware of what I was going to do to her. So she started to fight me even before we got in the door from school. And the row began then. So I suppose one of the days just got really so bad that I just held her down. I had to cut the clothes off her to get her into the bath. So I know when Gary came in from work, I couldn't get up off the bathroom floor. I had post-traumatic stress, I suppose, because Claudia would get a mantra in her head, like, leave me alone. And she would scream that for 4 hours solid. So my coping mechanism was I'd go up into my head and I'd just do what I had to do and get through it and then collapse after it. You know, and that was every day for a long, long time with no supports. So I had to hold my hand up. It felt like a bit of a failure. But the realisation, like, how am I going to sustain this? How am I going to get through the rest of Claudia's life managing this level of care that I couldn't, that EB was actually going to see me down. Mm. If it wasn't Claudia, it was going to take me and my family and our whole family unit. So I held my hand up and, you know, I started, like, and no one gives you guidelines how to approach our health system or anything. You start a journey of learning and understanding where you can and where you can't go. And I went on that journey and I fought long and hard. You know, I got a lot of no's. I got a lot of, yes, we believe you do deserve the support, but we don't have the resources. We don't have the funding. And then I suppose I got a bit feisty and I stopped, like, as I'm not going to take no for an answer here. I was trying to salvage my family.
Yeah, and I said it to you outside, you shouldn't have to come on national radio and tell your story because it's too painful. You shouldn't have to do it. But unfortunately, we live in a world where you have to do it. So I do apologise for that. So you had to shout and you had to shout loud and you had to become a nuisance. Mm. And all the time still doing what you had to do to keep your daughter alive.
Yeah, yeah. Very much so. And it's not natural. It's not the natural progression. And as I said, I've gone out of hell for leather for, say, kind of the 16 years and Claudia hit another wall. Every stage in her life brings every
new
time.
Challenges.
I never ever say anymore, it can't get any worse than this, because as soon as I say it, I'm up against another roadblock. And that's what it's like. Claudia hit 16, the realisation of her own condition, and then she struggled with her mental health in regards to coming to terms with how she was going to get through her own life. And that had a knock on then of me. Again, we were back in this battle again. And I can honestly say that wore me down to another level. So, like, at that stage, I was kind of 52 years of age, postmenopausal. I was going through the ringer with my own stuff, like, as an awful lot of women my age do, and trying to hold down a job, manage a home and everything, and just became relentless. I don't have that type of energy anymore. I just the burnout, and that gives me great fear. Like, when Claudia's in her 20s and I'm in my 60s, where's this going? You know.
And both, you know, Emma Fogarty very well. Yeah. Emma's in her mid to late 30s.
Yeah,
yeah.
And she's living with EB.
Yeah.
When you look at her, Claudia, what do you think?
I never used to think anything, because at a certain time in my life I was at a very good stage. But that was really me being naive and thinking that I'm not going to get like her. But now, as I've gotten to a certain age and I'm getting older, I see a lot of the traits in my condition that Emma now has. And it's scary, because I follow a lot of EB charity, like, different social media accounts, and every now and then unfortunate death would pop up, and that's scary, whether they are 5 to 55, you know. It's the age range is very, very broad, and that's scary, because I don't know when my life's going to end. Mm. And it's hard to deal with, you know, and it's hard to see Emma like that.
Yeah. And the progression as well, I see your hands are heavily bandaged there, so that's a thing, isn't it?
And that's happened. Now, I've been lucky in some ways, where it's taken 18 years for that to get like that without any surgery, so I'm blessed in that way. Where some kids have to get multiple surgeries to straighten their fingers out, I don't have the energy and will to do that because it's just going to happen all over again. But yeah, it's bad. I found ways to work around it because you have to adapt to the life.
Because you love art.
I do. I love art and I'm currently in makeup college.
Great. So you started college in September.
I did.
Yeah. That's a big move, isn't it?
It is. It's a new move. It's a lot better than school.
Why so?
School wasn't my forte. It really wasn't. Academically, socially, just didn't suit me at all.
Yeah.
But this is new territory and I've made friends and people are a lot more accepting, I feel, especially in class. And people just treat me normally, which is all I've ever wanted.
That's not brilliant.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen a difference in Claudia,
absolutely,
Liz?
Yeah, our energy, our mojo, it's back and it's so good. I was afraid to put all my eggs in one basket as in, oh, college is so different. Again, it's my first child,
yes,
it's all new
know.
To me,
yeah,
and
yeah,
I
no
was
benchmark,
like,
yeah.
It might not have happened that way.
No, it wasn't a given.
No, it wasn't a given at all. But
it has.
It has.
Yeah.
They wanted me to give them a shout out. So Blackrock Further Education College, hello. And thank you to my teacher, Tina, for doing my makeup.
So people are listening to you, Liz, and they're like, I'm say they're heartbroken. It is a big juncture, isn't it, going from 17 to 18, because now the services are different. Because you are Our Lady's Hospital, Crumlin, up until 18.
Up until 18, but still stuck there.
Right. Why, yeah. Liz?
Well, I wouldn't use the word stuck because they've been incredible.
Yes. Yeah, sorry.
I mean, they've been our saving grace over the year. You know, Claudia was diagnosed there, so I've had 18 years of a wonderful relationship in the EB nurses and the consultants and that. Unfortunately, there is no consultant in the adult services in St. James's Hospital, can you believe? So there is nowhere really for Claudia to transition to. The role is there, the post is there, the funding after a long, hard battle, it's there. But there isn't anyone biting on the role as such. I think it's the role isn't exactly what it needs to be. And I'm not a dermatologist, okay. So... But there isn't anywhere for Claudia or adults, young adults, to transition to. And the likes of Emma isn't getting the care that she deserves either. So that's very, very scary. I'm kind of cocooned in Our Lady's Hospital. You know, the trust is there. I know I'm being guided, you know, because it's you're managing at home. But you have to have your multidisciplinary clinics. You have to have
a
hospital.
The time I need the care, like at the age I'm at, it's getting into that scary territory. And for me and Emma, we need high, high level care.
Yeah.
And
because cancer is the killer, isn't it?
Cancer is the killer, as a sepsis.
Yeah.
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 So they're doing you a favour.
They are.
At the moment.
Yeah, which is terrible to say, like in this day and age. They're holding on to us till we have somewhere to go. But how long can they hold on to us, you know? And also as well, does Claudia want to be in her 20s, you know, scooting down the corridors of Our Lady's Hospital? Because it means she's not treated as an adult in her own right either.
And that's the thing. I'm reading here that you've had over 30 different nurses in the last year.
I've had to.
And what your treatment is very intimate, isn't it?
Very, yeah. And it's very unfair that I can't build relationships with people because I know the next week I'll probably never see them again and they won't walk back through our door again. And it's hard because I want to build these relationships because it's such an intimate relationship. I want to make them my friends. You know, I'm very, very lucky. Like one of my nurses has been with me 8 years and the other has been with me 15 years. And they've seen how hard it's been for me watching people leave me. And you get to a stage where you think it's because of you. It really isn't. It's just the area of work they don't want to work in.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wish there was just more people willing to, you know, want to work with us.
What happens in other countries, Liz?
Can't really say that there's a set model as such, you know. And for me as well, like, I suppose I want to set a precedent as well as in regards to what does good look like? What's the proper level of care? Like, I'm sure there is in other European, there's probably mothers that are at it, you know, 24/7, but they've given up everything. Mm. And I might sound selfish or selfless, whatever you want to call it. I deserve a life just because I've had a child with a disability that requires physical care. I've gone at it for 18 years. I am so burnt out. I couldn't even go into the advocacy, on my day off, emails, responding to people.
And as I said again, I do apologise. You, the fact that you have to come on, it's not, it shouldn't be that way. And I'd imagine the pressure on yourself and Gary over the years has been immense.
Huge. I've said it, and I'm sure Gary is listening there, you know. I love you, love, but, you know, but as in regards to, I don't know how our marriage survived. We don't give that same time as any other couple does, you know. One is always on one and one is always on the other, you know. You know, even from a social capacity over the years, Gar might say, like, Liz, I'm going for a game of golf on Saturday, and I'd know I would be on it, like getting Claudia up, doing her dressings, meds, feed, all that type of stuff. And then I might want to go for a walk or something on a Sunday. But that reversal of roles isn't possible anymore since Claudia went through puberty. Gary, you just can't step in. So I lost my right-hand man, but there was nothing to replace that. So I took on Gary's share as well, you know, as in that bounce off and just the time that we put into each other as well. As robbed us, EB is an absolute monster. It has robbed us of the life we should have had, the marriage that we should have had.
It's robbed everyone's lives.
The more kids that we should have had.
And this is important because I've witnessed it. There's loads of love.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you should be crying. I'm sorry about this, but there is loads of love in the family, isn't there? You know, because and you're here and you're telling that story, and sometimes it sounds a little bit cold and callous, but there's without love, you wouldn't have survived it.
No.
It's the only thing that's held us together.
Yeah.
No, I've put my hand up from the day I had her, as in, this is it. She's ours, you know, this is our responsibility. But you have to have the ability to hold up your hand and say, I just can't manage anymore. I just need a bit of support.
And it's not weak, and it's not like you're saying, oh, I'm holding up a white flag. You're not surrendering. It's anyone would do it in these types of needs, you know.
Yeah.
There's a certain stage you get to and you can't take it.
So it's EB Awareness Week. Deborah Ireland are the support group for parents and patients, deborahireland.org. And there is brilliant work being done, isn't there?
There is.
In looking for treatments and maybe not quite cures, but very good treatments.
Yeah, like down the line, most definitely there will be a cure. Probably, I'm just being a realist, not in Claudia's lifetime and probably not in my lifetime either. But I have been involved in the charity for 18 years, so I have seen tremendous change, and that's down to the work of the people that work for Deborah Ireland. You know, there's a family support worker there as well, like, you know, call out to the house if you want a phone call, what a chat. Again, me, like, I go to therapy, you know, I go to see somebody to offload. Again, they would pay for that for me, as you know, like 70 quid a week. It's just not, you know. Yeah. They would look after me in that respect as well. And kind of anything, you know, CEO Jimmy Fearon that you've met, it's just so approachable, as in it's not just a charity. They've become very much part of our family. So I could pick up the phone 24 hours a day and just say, Jimmy, I'm struggling. I'm struggling in this respect. Can you help me out? Now, whether that's home care, paying for a private nurse, you know, September of this year was really, really tough. Claudia's care plan fell apart.
Why?
Lack of resources. So this 9 hours that I was granted going back 12 years ago just fell apart. So just you get an email with a timetable on it saying this amount of shifts is not going to be covered for this month.
Can they do that?
They can, yeah, of course they can. The resources aren't there. So I was back in it, and I was back in it. So for me, I was defeated, first and foremost. All the years of fighting and all the years of, you know, and the little bit that you get, the small amount that you get, all of a sudden it was being retracted from me, that it wasn't there anymore.
So it was 9 hours a week?
Yeah, rough 12, nine hours a week for the full dressing changes. And obviously I had been looking for more, but that's kind of in a settling down period and stuff. Again, since Claudia dad kind of stepped out, you know, because he had to. But it's so little in such, you know, I look at other stuff that the government does and funds and everything, you know, COVID hit and we were able to throw billions at it, you know. I'm looking for a small slice of this cake, a really, really small to look after. Like, there's 200 people, you know, with EB in Ireland today. They're not all recessive dystrophics, but they deserve care. And also in Claudia's case, there's only about like 8 people in Ireland, if only. And we don't respect these 8 people. We are not giving them the care that they deserve. We're being passed. The condition isn't being acknowledged. It's really, really disrespectful.
And have you met ministers for health over the years?
Not necessarily ministers for health. I've got as far as TDs and stuff local. And, you know, we launched our advocacy programme there in Buswell's Hotel. And if there was 15, 16 people, again, reduced to tears. Yes, you're so right. But what's been done?
I know, we didn't get
granted the money this year. We were looking for $1 million to go into EB Care. It didn't happen.
Don't want your tears, want your money. We don't want your tears, we want your money.
It just didn't happen.
Fake emotions, fake words.
No action. Well, maybe that, I think you'd want a heart of stone not to be reduced to tears when you hear it. But you know, so maybe they were genuine, but still you need to go and act then afterwards, don't you? When
you leave that room in Buswell's.
I genuinely,
and this isn't, I'm no martyr, you know, I'm just doing what I have to do to keep Claudia right and to keep my family right or whatever else. I don't ever want any other mother to be sitting here in front of you, Ray, going through my 18 years. It has to stop.
It does have to stop. Dear Ray, I'm Claudia's uncle.
Hello.
I just want to send you a short note to thank you all for, that's that. We, your family, have witnessed their journey firsthand and their genuine, true life superheroes. Well done, Liz and Claudia. That's Patrick. Or my Pappy, brother. Is it?
Hi, Pappy.
And, I can't read these because I will cry, so I can't read them, but they're all support. But again, you need more than
Thank
that.
You need
services and you need money. DeborahIreland.org, if you want to find out more and you want to help, that's where to go. Listen, just to end on a bit of excitement in your life, Claudia.
Yes.
You're off to New York, New York. So good they named
it
twice. Yes.
And on Friday.
Right.
Yes.
And with...
No.
No. Oh, without... Independently. Without Manda.
Yeah. With my nurse, Maria. Well, I should call her my family at this stage. But,
yes.
Bon voyage, man.
Yeah, first time ever. We're going to go for a couple of days somewhere else.
Right.
And... we've never been out of the country together
yeah.
in different places in 18 years. So it's
this is the first.
It's huge.
She has signed now. She's having an actual panic attack.
Say again.
She's signed now, but she's having a panic attack.
Well, you can understand why. You can understand why.
I'll be fine.
And what's the plan in New York?
I don't know. We haven't booked anything yet, but we just want to see where it takes us.
Yeah, and would it be a bit of begins with S and ends with P, P-I-N-G.
Don't tell me that because it will happen.
Yeah.
My bank account is already screaming and it's we're not even there yet. So.
Yeah. Don't do it. Don't do
no.
it. Listen, again, you shouldn't have to do this, Liz. You shouldn't have to do this, Claudia. But it's the only way you can agitate for change, I suppose. And hopefully somebody was listening and hopefully change will happen. Liz, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Ray.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Lovely text coming in about Claudia and Liz and two really strong individuals. Now, Conor Pope joins us for Pricewatch. You can contact Conor at pricewatch@rte.ie if you want him to grapple with any of your consumer issues. The annual CXI survey is out.
That's right.
And that gives us a list of what?
The companies who perform best when it comes to customer experience and the companies who perform worst when it comes to customer experience in Ireland. And they've been doing this survey for many years.
How do they decide?
They decide it based on research from they conduct with people who've had customer experiences with various companies. So like it's a very exhaustive piece of research. I'm not 100% sure of the metrics that they use and all that stuff, but it has been going for a long time. And what's interesting is I think ever since it started, the credit unions always feature at number one. So I think for the eighth year in a row, the credit unions have been at number one. And then, you know, it goes all the way down to, I think, there's 150 or so companies. So for the credit unions at number one, I think Air this year is at number 150, you know. And then all the companies in between. But what's interesting, I think, is that there's a lot of forward-facing companies that interact with human beings as human beings in the top 10. So you've got four different pharmacy groups you have. You've got two big retailers, M&S and Dunn Stores are there. And then, as I say, the credit unions are in front. And they have been. And the reason why I think the credit unions are there is because people always get a sense that the credit unions are about people dealing with other people and treating them like human beings. And I know it sounds revolutionary to suggest that.
So retro.
That may be a kind of an answer because an awful lot of the time, big companies seek to depersonalize the relationship they have with their individual customers. And when you do that, it's going to lead to problems. So I think most people would say, OK, if I have a problem with my credit union, I could probably walk into my credit union branch and say, hi, Mary, I've got a problem with my account. And Mary would solve the problem on the spot. And that's why I think, and that's not based on exhaustive research or anything, but that I think is the differentiator between a good company and a bad company.
Could the banks take a leaf out of their book, or do they care?
Well, I think what the banks want to do, and it's not just Irish banks, it's banks all over the world. They want to move away from having a face-to-face relationship with their customers, and they want to move people online. And of course, the thing is, like for me, I don't know about you, but for me, I'm more than happy to deal exclusively with my bank in the online space. I don't want to go into a branch ever. If I never go into a bank branch again, I'd probably be happy.
But you want a point of contact, though.
But I do want... No, I don't need one.
You don't want a point of contact.
As long as the technology is sufficiently good.
Do you not want somebody who knows who you are and your circumstances?
No, not really. Right, because all I want is my problem to be resolved.
Okay.
I don't care how that problem gets resolved. I just want it to be resolved. So if I can do that myself with three or four clicks of a mouse pad, well, then I'm happy with that. Or if I can phone a number and somebody answers it after two, three, even 5 minutes, I'm happy with that if they can resolve the problem.
Okay.
What I'm not happy with is if I have to call and spend 45 minutes hearing, your call is important to us, please hold. Or if the website is so complicated, or if instead of dealing with a human being in the online space, I'm dealing with some kind of chatbot using algorithms to try and identify my problem. I have a problem with that. And I think the difficulty that a lot of companies have, and it's not just banks, it's all these big companies, they've invested too much in the technology without getting it right. And then they've disinvested or taken money away from the frontline human interactions that can actually get it right. Because
surely a mix of both is where it should be at.
100%.
Can I just say, because we have to move on, that Woody's have jumped up the thing. And I find myself in Woody's a fair bit these days.
Yeah.
And I always find their customer service amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And the staff, and I just wanted to mention that.
And do you know what? The thing is, what it is about, is about you approaching a member of staff and saying, can you help me with this?
Yes.
And they say, yes, I can.
Yes.
And then they go and help you. And it's not that hard. And that's what kills me about a lot of these companies.
They insist on walking you to it.
I always feel kind of embarrassed by that. And it happens a lot in M&S too. So you'll say, where are the beans? And they'll say, come with me. I'll show you where the beans are.
Just point.
I'll be grand. And then you have that kind of awkward interaction where they say, no, I must take you to the beans. Just vague location is all I'm looking for. But, you know, that's a good sign of a good business.
It is, right. Okay. And you can see that online, the CXI survey. Now, this came into pricewatch.rte.ie. We transferred just under 6,000 to our daughter in the UK for her new house in England. The money went from PTSB, PTSB, our account to HSBC, her account, last May. The money never arrived into our account. We contacted our local PTSB branch and failing to get a result, we made a formal complaint after around 4 weeks. We subsequently contacted the financial ombudsman, having been totally frustrated by the lack of support from PTSB. It is currently investigating the matter. Fast forward to last Friday, we received a letter from PTSB Resolution Centre, basically washing their hands of the entire matter and offering us €50 as a gesture in full and final settlement. PTSB has said that the money was successfully transferred from our account to HSBC and that it's sitting in an account in HSBC waiting for someone to take action. Can you advise?
Wow. Wouldn't this drive you mad?
Yes, it would.
I mean, like, these parents are trying to do something lovely for their child, and they do something lovely. They send her a few grand to get herself set up in her new house, and the money never arrives. And I think I've spoken to them on the telephone, and what happened was, So they sent the money as a surprise, and then they didn't hear back from their daughter about the surprise. And so then they were going, we haven't heard back from Mary. That's not her name, but like, we haven't heard back from Mary in a long time or about the money. So then they rang her and said, did you get anything into your account? And she was like, no. And then the process started. So what was supposed to be this lovely surprise for their daughter turned into this horrible saga.
Oh, cool. It was a surprise.
So yes, it turned into this horrible saga. Yeah. So I suppose the first thing you have to do is, like, what happened? So, like, when they were transferring the money from A to B, I mean, they thought they'd followed all the right steps, and there might have been some confusion as to what happened and whether or not there was the right sort code or BIC code or BIC or whatever it might be. But bottom line is that, hey, the PTSB could identify where the money was, but they couldn't get the money back. So weeks passed, and the money that was supposed to go to their daughter as a present for her housewarming was stuck in somebody else's account, or stuck in in account.
Right.
It doesn't matter if it was anybody's. It wasn't being taken out. There was no sense that there was fraud happening here. It was just a mistake. The money went into the wrong account. Whether or not that was the fault of the PTSB site, the HSB site, or indeed the individuals, is neither here nor there.
Right.
PTSB knew where the money was. HSBC knew where the money was. And the money wasn't going back to the individuals. And you, I've often wondered what happens in those scenarios. And that's why when I'm keying in somebody's bank details on my own online banking, yeah. I'm like going incredibly slowly because you don't get a number wrong. And then like, oh, where's the money gone? So anyway, so then they went to their local branch. And this is the whole thing. The local branch said, well, there's nothing we can do. So then they went to higher up along the chain of PTSB. And then they got this letter from PTSB saying, well, there's nothing more we can do. We've exhausted our procedures. Here's 50 quid.
50 quid is so small and so random.
It's absurd and so random. So anyway, I contacted PTSB to find out what was going on. And I spoke to this individual and I really felt for them because you kind of think, as a parent, like I have, my children are much younger, but as a parent, it's the kind of thing you'd love to do for your kids if you were in any way in a position to do it. So anyway, I spoke to the person. They were genuinely upset and they were at a loss as to what to do. And then I contacted PTSB and like, they did investigate it thoroughly and they came back to me and first off they apologised for the situation and they apologised directly to our listener and they agreed immediately to repay him the full amount. He was attempting to transfer to his child and they're going to continue to work with HSBC to resolve the issue because ultimately they're going to be able to get the money back. The money hasn't disappeared into the ether. It hasn't been spirited away to the east by some criminals. Like the money is there. So it's just a question of getting the right person in HSBC to answer the phone to the right person in PTSB and then the money can get transferred. But anyway, they've stepped up to the plate. They're going to return the money. They have already returned the money to our listener. And they explained to me how the whole letter thing works. For the ombudsman to investigate the complaint, it has to have reached some kind of impasse with the bank. So the letter they send out saying, we've investigated the case fully and now we're not going to investigate it anymore. That's a letter that they send out to allow the ombudsman carry out their investigations.
Uh-huh.
So it's a formulaic thing,
yeah, yes.
And
yeah.
I was assured by the bank that even though the letter had been sent out, it wasn't the end of the road for the bank. They were still endeavouring to investigate it. But maybe somebody, and this is where it comes down to how the conversation started, maybe somebody somewhere could have explained that to him and said, listen, don't worry about the letter. We have to send that out because then you can produce that letter to the ombudsman. The ombudsman can investigate it and we'll take it from there. But he was left in, our listener was left in limbo. His child was left in limbo, but now they have their money back and all is well in the world.
And well done you.
Well done, Ray Darcy Show.
Well done you. And if you want something similar, Sort It Out by Conor Pope, pricewatch@rte.ie. Thanks very much, Conor.
Thanks a lot,
talk to you next week.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gurumah, good Marion. Thank you very much. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. It's time for a little quiz. And we have two quizzers standing by and we have a great prize this week, a luxurious trip to Carton House. Carton House is a Fairmont hotel, the first in Ireland, I think. So you can go there, enjoy a cosy escape for two. This stunning Georgian estate on 1,000 acres of sweeping parkland, ancient woodlands, lakes and the meandering River Rye, making it the most picturesque backdrop for an autumn stay. And it's just 25 minutes from Dublin. So two nights stay for two people. On the line we have Tara Walsh. How are you doing, Tara?
Hi, Ray. How's it going?
Not too bad. You're in Ashtown.
I am indeed.
Where's Ashtown? Dublin. Yeah.
It is. It's over by the Phoenix Park, between the Phoenix Park and Cabra.
Oh yeah. So you're close to Castle Knock there and
close to Castle Knock, yeah.
Right, okay. And does the marathon go through Ashtown next week, do you know?
I don't know, because I only just moved here.
Oh, did you?
Like, I'd be doing well to run a 5K.
I didn't ask you if you're going to run it, but you could get out and support them next Sunday. It's a great event to get out and support. Yeah.
It is. Yeah. And I just was driving through the park and I thought, oh, the marathon's going to be here on Sunday. So, Ray, I'm going to do it.
You're going to get out and support them, are you?
I'm going to get out and support them. I'm not going to do the marathon.
But you'll find it very fulfilling. And I know it's not quite as fulfilling as completing the marathon, but there's something about it. There's an energy and I think you'll enjoy it. And we might talk to you next Monday and see how you get on. No, we won't. We're not on Monday because the bank holiday. Anyway, would you have something else to do next weekend as well, don't you?
I do. I'm going to see my brand new baby niece, Ava. Well, maybe brand new is the wrong word. She's about 7 weeks.
Yes. And is this the first time?
he's the first grandchild, so she's a big deal in the family. Yeah.
But is this the first time you'll see her?
No, it'll be only the second time.
Oh, it's second time. And you get a squish and a smell and all that sort of stuff, which you do with little babies. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We were sitting on a bench on Saturday in Stephen's Green, and there was a couple beside us with a little baby, and it was just all the noises and the goo goo and the gaga and the loveliness. And it's not your own, which is even better.
It is. It is. Yeah. You get the cuteness, but you still get to have a good night.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're a secondary school teacher. What do you teach?
That's it. I teach Irish mostly and music as well as my other subject.
Right. And are you in a Gaelic school or a...
No, I'm not.
And what year do you teach to right across the...
I teach them all and they're absolutely brilliant. They're just a great group of kids.
And do you want to mention name, check the school?
Yeah, it's Adamstown Community College.
Yes, and the brilliant thing about this week is that you're looking forward to midterm. I presume next week's midterm, is it?
It is. It is. Very much looking forward to it.
The whole week?
The whole week.
Wow.
Yeah, great.
Nice.
It is great.
Yes, it is.
I know.
Another person who has a midterm coming is Aina O'Murray.
That's right, yeah. Hi, Ray.
Is it Murray or... it's
Murray, yeah.
Murray, right. Okay.
Yeah.
M-U-I-R-E, pronounced Murray.
Right. That's right, yeah.
Oh, there's an E-fada.
Yeah. There is.
Is there an English equivalent to that, Aina?
Yeah, it'd be a version of Murray.
Oh, right, okay. Aina O'Murray. Right, great. And are you in Ashtown as well?
I'm also in Ashtown, yeah.
Will you just walk outside your houses there and see if you can see each other? And you're also a teacher.
I'm also a teacher. I'm also not far from Tara. I'm in Lucan as well. So,
But it's a Gaelic school you teach in?
Yeah, Gaelic School, primary school, yeah.
Ah, right, okay. So, big excitement, more so than secondary school, about Halloween, I'd say, is there?
Definitely, yeah. Big excitement, yeah. Everyone has planned their outfits now for Friday.
Yeah, do you have to dress up?
We do.
Well, go on.
Well, I can't tell you, Ray, because we always have a team that the staff, we don't tell the kids or the parents.
It's a surprise.
It's a surprise on Friday morning, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not going to ruin that surprise. But have you got it, or will it be a last minute thing?
I have mine ready.
You have yours ready? Okay, great. Yeah. And do you look well in it?
I'm a bit oversized for it now, seeing as that it's actually belonging to my daughter, who's two, so I'll try and squeeze.
What's the name of your daughter?
Dirren
O'Murray. Yeah.
Dirren Nicoy.
Nicoy, right.
Yeah,
okay.
She has her mother's name, yeah.
She has her mother's name, right. Okay. Yeah. And what's it? Nicoy. Nicoy.
Nicoy,
yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. Right. So, you know the deal, Tara and Aina. It's three questions each. If you go for a long clip, you get a point. If you go for a shorter clip, more difficult, so you get 2 points, whereas the most points at the end is the winner. If it's a draw, we go to a tie break question. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Good luck, Tara.
Now, the year is 1993, Tara. Is what? 29 years ago. 29 years ago.
I was young. I was very young, but we're giving it a shot.
Okay, we're starting at the movies. Do you want to go long or short?
I go long.
You go long. This movie about dinosaurs was a smash hit in 1993. Can you name it?
Well, we clocked the T-Rex at 32 miles an hour.
You said you've got a T-Rex?
Uh-huh.
That was the short one. I have to give you the long one. Hold on.
The T-Rex is 32 miles an hour.
You said you've got a T-Rex?
Uh-huh.
Say again. We have a T-Rex.
Put your head between your knees.
Now, there you go, the long one. What do you think?
I suppose it's Jurassic Park.
It is Jurassic Park. You had a point for that. You're probably kicking yourself that you didn't go short.
Yeah,
there you go. Yeah. Okay, Aina, movies from 1993, long or short?
I'll go short.
You go short, yes. This movie about a man who disguised himself as a nanny was another top grossing movie of 1993. Here's your short clip.
Miss Hillen?
Yes, dear?
I take sugar in my tea.
Oh, your tea!
Mrs. Doubtfire?
Yes, the brilliant Robin Williams as Mrs. Doubtfire, and you get 2 points for that. Back to you, Tara. Music from 1993. You sort of have to go short now, don't you?
Yes,
yeah.
No, sorry.
This song hit the top of the Irish charts in 1993. You want the name of the song or the name of the singer? Here's your short clip.
That is all I'm taking with me.
That's Whitney Houston. I will always love you.
Yes. Brilliant singer, brilliant song. And you get 2 points. Aina.
I'll go short.
Short. Another song that hit the top of the Irish charts in 1993. Can you name the song or the singer? Here we go.
As long as the wheels are turning,
I recognise the voice. Cher?
No.
No.
She did duet with this guy, Meatloaf.
Ah, Meatloaf.
Yeah. I would do anything for love, but I won't do that. Right, now this is interesting. Anna, you're on two. Tara, you're on three. If you go short on this one and get it right, Anna can't catch you. If you go long on it and get it right, then Anna goes short, he gets it right, we're into a tiebreak situation. If you get it wrong and then Anna goes short, then he wins. So there, I think they're all the permutations. There could be more, but that I think that's about it. So what are you going to do?
I'll go short.
You're going to go short. Right, okay. In 1993, this person became the 42nd president of the USA. Can you name him to win today's quiz? Here's your short clip.
Today we celebrate the mystery of American renewal.
Who's that?
That's Bill Clinton.
It is Bill Clinton, yes. And you get 2 points. You're on five. Andy, you can't catch her. Meatloaf, huh? Meatloaf. And you were in the right ballpark with Cher. I know that sounds odd, but you were.
But
not close enough. So we're going to send you out a couple of Ray Darcy Show mugs, and good luck with the dress up on Friday, and lovely talking to you.
That's great. Thanks, Ray. Okay. Cochordigas Tara.
Slán, Anna. Slán. Good luck. See you. Bye. Bye. Cochordigas Tara. Well done. Yeah, so you're off to a long trip for you from Ashtown to Carton House, but it's not about that, is it? It's about the luxury and the splendour.
It's a beautiful place.
Yes, and the linen, the bed linen, and the pillows, and the oh. So enjoy that, and well done. Great talking to you, Tara.
Thank
Mind yourself.
You.
See
Thanks
you. Bye, 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 bye.
Take care.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
That's very funny. Niamh, who's producing the show today, came in to say that our next guest has been delayed. And she said in the same breath, and there's the route of the marathon. So I think she expects me to read out the whole. So you start on Fitzwilliam Street up or Fitzwilliam Place. No, I'm not going to do that. Hopefully Donnie or even Dolly Alderton would be in situ after this. Why do you only ever call me when you're high? That's the Arctic Monkeys on RTE Radio 1. A question you could put to our next guest, I suppose. Heartbreak, hurt and body issues are all ingredients when it comes to an Agony Aunt's column. An award-winning journalist, author, screenwriter, podcaster and columnist Dolly Alderton knows that all too well. Since 2020, Dear Dolly, an Agony Aunt column for the Sunday Times Style magazine has been sharing her wisdom, warmth and wit with those that have been seeking her advice. She's now compiled some of her many standout letters for a new book, Dear Dolly, on love, life and friendships. And she joins us now from a studio in London. Hello, Dolly.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
I love saying hello, Dolly, because that's a song from my childhood. You don't remember it, do you?
I know. I'd love that movie. I'm disappointed you didn't sing it, I'll be honest.
No, you're not. If you heard this, you are not. Congratulations on the book. And I know it is a collection, but there's a lovely introduction which puts you and I suppose the role of an agony aunt in context. So you were fascinated by agony aunts from a very young age.
Yes, I think there was this thing that was a big thing for millennial women, but actually I think it might have been a thing for my mother's generation, maybe even my grandma's generation, which was problem pages in magazines, which is when girls would write in with their sort of darkest shame and secrets, and then a kind of loving, matronly, unjudgmental, anonymous woman would reply with reassurance and advice. And I think there was just something about those pages that felt so reassuring to me, and kind of the stuff that you couldn't say to your friends or your mum or your teacher. It was just this like place of sacred confession. And that's how I got kind of hooked on agony aunting, reading that.
Yeah, it's interesting because we're all fascinated by it. You had a bigger fascination. Is it voyeurism, or is it there but for the grace of God go we, or what is it? do you think?
Yeah, it's an interesting mix, isn't it? I think even now I love reading Agony Aunt pages and Problem pages. I think it's a mix of voyeurism. I think it's reassurance. I think it's connection to know that we all go through similar things.
Yes.
And then, as you said, I think, you know, he's kind of schadenfreude as well. Yeah. There's something about observing other people's messes that in moments are worse than ours. It just gives us some sort of mild sense of relief or achievement.
Yeah, like we do it on the radio and everybody does it, don't they? But you do particularly well because you've studied the greats, I suppose, haven't you? Like, who are your heroes when it comes to Agony Antum?
Well, there are so many. I mean, there's obviously like the classic agony aunts like Claire Rayner, who obviously went for decades and decades, Philippa Perry, Mariella Frostrup. The woman that I always turn to for advice in her writings is Nora Ephron. And there's something about the certainty of her writing, even if I don't necessarily agree with it, that makes me feel reassured and comforted. I think one of the reasons agony aunts do so well and why there's such an appeal for them now, even though they're quite old-fashioned, is I think that we just want... I think it's difficult to be sure of anything in life, particularly now, particularly when there's so much choice. And I think the idea of hearing a woman who's completely certain on how you make life easier for yourself, it's just a great comfort for me.
Because none of them, including yourself, have a qualification as such.
No. School of life.
The school of life. Because now, and that's what has changed, I suppose, since your mum's time, your grandmother's time, is that there is a plethora of psychologists and psychiatrists and all willing to offer their advice.
Yes.
And they use the jargonese. And I think people still gravitate towards people like yourself.
Thank you for saying that. Do you know what I think it is? I think people can be entirely assured if they know me or know my work at all, or probably even just look at the byline picture of me, that I am definitely a woman who is well versed in mistakes and regrets.
Go on, you have to explain that to us now.
I've made a living out of confessing all the kind of bad decisions I've made and the wrong men that I've gone for and relationship mistakes I've made and the risks that I've taken. And I think the transparency of that, some would argue, would maybe make me unqualified to hand out advice. But I actually think that it kind of...
Well, I remember a wise person said to me once that to know how to do something right, it helps to know how to do it wrongly first.
There you go.
Yeah, your memoir, Everything I Know About Love. And you did, you shared an awful lot. And I suppose older people say that you're from a generation that overshare. Do you find as you're getting older that you're less likely to overshare, that you're a little bit more cautious, guarded?
Certainly. I mean, something that's been difficult with something that's complicated since I published that book is naturally, I think, people become more private with age. I think you naturally become more confident that there are other parts of yourself that are engaging and interesting and vulnerable that don't necessarily entail disclosing very personal things about yourself. But it's a tricky one because I also don't judge that younger version of myself, because I don't think that 28-year-old who wrote that book, she didn't think of it as oversharing. I remember writing it and thinking it was incredibly cathartic and connecting. Mm. So even though it feels strange to me now to kind of publish diary entries and I wouldn't do it, I also sort of have a strange admiration for my younger self. I try not to judge my younger self.
But you
it.
Do, you know, in reading the book, there's an awful lot of you in your answers.
Yes.
You know, even the first one, I think it's the first one, is it? That it's a girl who's quite tall. And you are, you are what height?
6 foot.
6 foot, yeah. So you're quite tall. And it is about men's relationship to tall women, isn't it? And you I suppose you could write a thesis on that.
Yeah.
I'm 5 foot 8¾, just so you know. So who you're talking to, you know what I mean? Right.
Well, the
3/4
really matter. I know that for sure. It's an interesting thing that how much you include yourself. Something that I do is I often refer to past pains. It's very rare that I'll break news about my own life in answering other people's problems, because most of the time I'm sort of, at any given time when I'm giving out advice to anyone, I'm normally working through some sort of issue or dilemma, as we all are, you know. So I try not to break news about that stuff while I'm still processing it. The other great thing that I do, which you will now notice in my writing that other agony aunts do, is I often outsource it to anonymous friends. So anytime you read an anecdote of someone who, a friend of mine who's going through X, Y, and Z, you can be sure as eggs it's me.
Yeah, and you cite in your introduction as well, was it Nora Ephron, or one of your heroes, got to a stage that she had answered so many problems over the years that she had numbered them. Problem and then answer. So she would go, oh, that's a 45, I'll give it a 65 answer.
But
there are common themes,
isn't it?
Aren't there? There are, like, for example, wedding politics. That's a big theme, I would imagine, recurring, is it?
Yes, I get so many letters about wedding politics. I'm amazed that you predicted that, because that's something I really didn't predict. And every week in the inbox, there's problems, there's wedding, politics and infighting. And yeah, it seems to be a
It's huge. It's huge because there's so many people involved. And then if parents are paying for it, well, then they have a say, don't they?
Yeah, and also I suppose there's something like, there's a reason why so many movies and so many great Shakespeare plays revolve around weddings. It's about bringing different cultures together, bringing different families together, loyalty, money, as you say.
Heightened emotions.
So it is like ripe for drama.
So you separate into dating, friendship, relationships, family, sex, breakup and exes, and body and soul. Family, tough. Friendships is a thing. And you say that you can plot a woman's life, and it's mainly women who contact you through the decades. So just give us a sort of a whirlwind trip through the decades then.
Yeah, it's a very depressing whirlwind trip. It's not an open bus tour. I just noticed from answering these letters, and they really do range from young teenagers to women in their normally late 70s. And every decade of anxiety is captured. And it's normally about sort of not being a good enough woman or not being the right sort of woman. So teenage girls will reply to me petrified that they're not going to lose their virginity or that no one fancies them. Mm. Women in their 20s write about they, you know, feel lost. They don't know what their career should be. They can't find a boyfriend. Women in their 30s write to me about they're terrified they're not going to have children. Women in their 40s tell me they're bad mothers. Women in their 50s worry that their husbands are cheating or they have to start again, and how, you know, they blame themselves. And then even women in their 70s, I'm getting letters about, you know, erectile dysfunction or things slowing down in bedrooms, and you know, it's incumbent on them, they feel, to spice things up. And it really is a slice of female anxiety, and it is quite sad to read sometimes.
I know from reading the introduction that you do feel a responsibility on your shoulders, and particularly if somebody more than twice your age is asking for your advice.
Yeah, I mean, I do have to do quite a lot of crowdsourcing. Every answer that I do, I normally speak to friends and colleagues. And if I'm having meetings that week, I'll kind of float the question out to get as many opinions
as possible. Oh, here's Dolly Duck.
Exactly. Yeah, because I do feel the responsibility of it. And the other thing I think is important, you know, I got a heartbreaking one last month from a woman who has been married for 40, 50 years. And her husband, she found out recently, her husband confessed that he had an affair with her best friend in the 1970s for 2 years, and then it broke off, and he'd never been unfaithful since. And I, you know, that was an extraordinary thing for her to disclose to a 34-year-old who has never had a relationship that lasted longer than 2 years.
And maybe, because we have to go now, Dolly, I'm sorry, but maybe just writing it down is you know, cathartic, as you said, about your own memoir. Dear Dolly, on love, life and friendship, collected wisdom from her Sunday Times style column, Dolly Alderton. Thank you so much for coming into a studio in London. Great talking to you. Thanks,
absolute
Dolly.
Pleasure.
Bye.
Thank
now.
You.
Bye. That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on the way with Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.